Hello and welcome everyone. My name is Amarta Bernal and you are listening to A Different Path. Welcome back everyone to another edition of A Different Path, and this episode is a very interesting one for me, as today I have with me environmental activist and autism advocate Paige Powell, who has just been diagnosed with autism at a very later stage in life. How are you doing today, Paige?
I'm doing well, thanks.
I think my listeners would agree when I say that it is not very typical to meet people that have been diagnosed with autism so late in their life. So we would all love to hear your story.
So I am 37 years old, and I've only been formally diagnosed for about a month and a half, maybe 2 months now. I started to suspect that I might be on the spectrum a couple of years ago. Someone I was dating at the time who had Asperger's suggested that I had issues with eye contact, and had I considered it before, and I thought he was just being a little bit dramatic. But as more and more people kind of suggested it, or, you know, made observations about some of my behavior, I guess it had planted a seed in my mind. And I guess the real sort of instigating incident for me that led me down the path to diagnosis was a few years ago. I kept getting in trouble at work for disrespectful communication, which to me was a huge shock, because I've always thought of myself as a good communicator. I could communicate across large varieties of the population, you know, speak to different levels of education and people with all kinds of different backgrounds. I'm a pretty good communicator in the written word as well as through speech. I've done a lot of teaching in my professional career. And so I feel like communication is something that I'm pretty good at, or I always thought I was pretty good at. And respect especially is my number one paramount virtue that I hold high. At that point, I considered, well, maybe, you know, there is something to this autism thing for me. And I read, I did a search about female presenting traits. I found a really great website that had a really comprehensive list of 20 different areas of your life and all of these different traits that may or may not be present in females on the autism spectrum. And I had 95% of them were accurate to me. And I was like, whoa, at that point, it really hit home. And it was something that I'd never considered before. And it really made me reevaluate my entire life experience, everything I'd thought about myself growing up, as a friend, as a student, as a child. It made me reevaluate my relationships to other people and the world. And it actually gave me a lot of relief that I wasn't a broken person, that I wasn't some kind of alien in my skin. Yeah. So I kind of sat with the realization that I was on the spectrum having self-diagnosed, and I sought out some resources where I live in the city of Houston. And I found there's this really great organization called Spectrum Fusion that helps adults on the autism spectrum with a number of different things. Having not been diagnosed, or having only really realizing it in my mid-30s, and having looking back at my entire life through this new lens, has been quite the journey.
And it gave you a sense of clarity, would you say?
I don't think I've got the clarity quite yet, because there's still so much to rediscover. I mean, there was one the other day when I was like, oh, that makes so much more sense. It was just almost just relief. It was just a sense of relief about that. Explains a lot, a lot. It gave me, I guess, a lot more self-compassion. I've always been really hard on myself. And so when you don't fit in, or you don't say the right thing, or you don't fit the mold, it can be hard to live with yourself. You think you're bad at being a person or whatever. So I think that's been the greatest benefit to me of having this knowledge in the diagnosis, is that I'm allowed to give myself that grace and look back on some of the less desirable or imperfect aspects of my history through this lens of different information.
So how has this newfound diagnosis that you've had impacted the way that you work and interact with others now in your job?
I feel it affords me more authenticity in my work. You know, I think especially in the environmental activism or climate activism field, there's you know, they want you to bring your whole self to work, you know, but there's also this sort of limitation and personal restriction of like, I have to be a professional at work. I need to be my professional self. I can't bring my whole crazy colorful self. That would not be appropriate. And so, you know, as I sort of have come to be more accepting of, I guess, my innate mannerisms and nature and thoughts and intuition outside of a masking context, right? I become more authentic and comfortable with myself, which allows me to, you know, bring that into my career.
There was quite some time where I believe individuals with autism would feel maybe a little bit of shame for having the diagnosis, thinking that they were different, that they didn't fit in, as you said earlier. As years have gone by, awareness has happened, acceptance has happened, but do you still feel a sense of shame, or did you at all feel once you did receive that diagnosis?
No, for me, it was the opposite. I like I said, I just got the diagnosis recently and it was just like, oh, great. Yep. I'm hashtag officially autistic. Like, you know, I mean, I've been talking about it for a couple of years because it's something I was pursuing and it's something I had a really strong understanding of intimately. I was like, I am this thing, whether or not the medical community acknowledges it. Having, you know, the label is just like super easy for me and it allows me to explain it in like very succinct way. Right. Rather than letting people know like, oh, I'm hypersensitive and I've got OCD and, you know, like there's a little bit of like manic depressive and I also have like, you know, major anxiety in social situations. And, you know, like I just, my brain thinks differently. And I, you know, like there's all of these traits that take a really long time to explain like who I am and just say like, I'm autistic. I think the biggest problem is that it scares a lot of like neurotypicals. They don't know what it means. Or like when you tell them that, they're like, but you seem so normal. You're like a functioning human. You're not autistic. Or people will say, well, everyone's a little autistic, right? I'm sure you hear that a lot.
Yeah, I do hear that a lot.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, but some people are like more, like a lot more to where like they want to identify with that because it's right for them. Like for me, like I said, it just explained who I was and the experiences that I'd had in my life so well that it was just like comforting.
Where do you think this fear with neurotypical people or others that may not be familiar with autism, where do you think that comes from?
When I first heard about autism or, you know, like when you hear about it in the news or in the media, you always hear about the most extreme cases about people who are like nonverbal or, you know, they're 20 years old, but they have the IQ of a 5-year-old or something like that. And so I think there's this like fear of the unknown because it is such a wide range and there's a huge spectrum of ability. So I think the fear by neurotypicals is like, they don't really know what it means to be on the autism spectrum and they don't know where you are on the spectrum or what that means for them or to them or how it relates to them. So it's a little bit scary because it's unknown.
So what about your field? You're a climate activist, you work with grant proposals and things like that. Do you see a lot of individuals in autism in your field or is it really just you in this kind of field right now?
No, I actually think there's a lot more of us out there than most people recognize. You know, I've always surrounded myself with like-minded individuals. And so I have a lot of friends who are really smart and I have a lot of friends who are really sensitive. And I have a lot of friends who are really empathetic and really passionate for justice. And all of those things are classic traits for autism spectrum disorder. So I think it's really common in, you know, the social sciences, the people who want to change the world, they're never going to be content in the box. And I think the more people who come out, the more people who are diagnosed as adults, the more women who are diagnosed, it sort of expands like the circle of inclusion and casts like a safety net to say like, it's okay, you can be autistic. You're not going to be, you know, blacklisted. You're not going to be unemployable. You can be fantastic and brilliant and excel in your career and have this like really special gift that allows you to do all of these things.
The fact of the matter is that a lot of individuals with autism are unemployed. the statistics are high for those that get out there. They don't see well-paying jobs or they don't have a job at all. So seeing individuals in these different fields from previous interviews that I've had, and now your interview as well, really shines a light on what individuals with autism can do. So with your career field, is this something that you would recommend to others with autism, or is it really a struggle that you see every day when you're trying to make an impact that the way you are?
Honestly, I think it's a struggle. I think because I feel things so deeply that I'm drawn to the work because I don't really have a choice. My personal life and my career, I know my family has told me, like, Paige, you don't have to save the world. You know, you can just be a bookkeeper and be okay with that. But because I'm so compelled to, like, climate justice and speaking for those who can't speak for themselves, like, this is the career that I've chosen. And it's hard. It's heartbreaking. There's, you know, you don't ever really win. The work is never done. There are small wins here and there. And of course you can, like, finish tasks individually, but it's an insurmountable challenge to overcome. And for me, it's been really overwhelming at times. And so I've really had to focus on self-care. I've had to take time off to, like, learn how to moderate my life-work balance and to, you know, avoid getting too wrapped up in the mission, so that I don't burn out. So I would say, yeah, enter at your own risk, as scary as that sounds. Like I would be perfectly happy just working on spreadsheets for the rest of my life. I love boxes and putting things in boxes and making them add up. Would that be as fulfilling? No. Would it be less stressful? Yes.
I think that's important that you found something that you really enjoy and you're pushing through policy that matters to you. So what was it like when you told your friends and family? Did they feel like they always knew and they just didn't have a name for what you felt and what you were?
Well, I sent it to my mom first, you know, and I sent her the link of, like, the online, like, traits for female presenting autism spectrum. And she was like, are you self-diagnosing? And I was like, yes. And she's like, well, this does sound a lot like you. And I was like, yes, that's why I sent it to you. And so then, you know, like, flash forward 3 years when I got my formal diagnosis and I sent that over to her, you know, and she said something like, you know, I'll always love you and I'll always be here for you no matter what, which I think is very, she meant it in a really supportive way. But I think for me, like, it wasn't necessarily the response that I was hoping for, because I would have liked to have heard, yes, I always knew this was you. I don't know that she's really, like, it's really sunk in for her, because as I'm having to, like, reprocess everything that happened in my life through this lens, I would imagine my mother and my father would do the same thing. You know, on the opposite side, there are some friends who are like, yeah, we know, we've known you. We've known you for 15 years. You're artistic. And I'm like, yeah, but they're like, no, like, trust me, join the club. Welcome to the club. We're here for you. You got a label, good. We know who you are.
That's awesome. Let's get back to your job really quick. What led you down this career path into public policy? Has this always just been a part of your life?
Yeah, I think so. I remember when I was in elementary school, I heard that, like, we were already doing, like, Save the Rainforest campaign, you know, and recycling and stuff. And I heard that there was a hole in the ozone layer. And I was just like, oh my God, that's it. Like, we gotta save the rainforest. We gotta fix the ozone layer. Like there's not gonna be anything left, you know? And so here I am, like, 30 years later, and I'm working in environmental policy, and it was a weird road getting here. You know, I originally started out when I went to college as a mechanical engineering major, because I was really good at math and physics. You know, when we got involved in the Iraq war, and that was right at that time. And I couldn't really ignore the politics of it. And I kind of signed on with the Green Party. I was active in Harris County in the Texas Green Party and got on with that movement. And then when I went back to college, I got involved in, like, I switched my major to political science and ended up in economics. Because economics is a mathematical social science. And so I was able to, at that point, like, use my skill set and my quantitative abilities to, like, speak to the world around me. Economics sort of led me in the road to policy, because I find, like, policy much more attractive than politics. I tried politics. I tried working in city council. I found everybody had the same shiny shoes. There was a lot of that lying that we talked about, a lot of sort of facade, and I couldn't really deal with that. But policy is very solution oriented. It's data-based. There's a problem to solve, and here's the best way to go about it. I remember when I was a kid thinking, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? Well, I want to work in a think tank. I want to, like, write laws and tell people what to do, not because I have some power trip, but because I have hyper-analyzed how things are should be done and what would be the best and most efficient way to do those things for greater society. And so, like, that's really what policy is like prescribing guidelines for an effective and happy society.
Do you think that you're accomplishing that through your current field of work?
I don't know. I'm currently looking for a new position. I'm not sure where I'm going to end up. I've heard, like, if you tie yourself to a job or an organization, you know, you're going to blow with the wind. But if you fix your sights on a mission, you will always have like sort of a steadfast, you know, North Star. And that's where I'm at. I know what it is that I want to do. And there's a million ways that I can help the cause. So I'll find my way.
And so are you going to focus more on environmental policy still? Or now with your diagnosis, do you think that you could do some good with any policies regarding autism?
Environmental, I think, is just the most important thing. Like, having worked in air quality for so many years, something that I told a lot of my students and prospective donors is like, if you can't breathe, there's nothing else that matters. And if the world is on fire, then autism, it doesn't matter. Like, I know every individual cause is important to people, but to me, there is the only one most important thing is this blue and green ball that we're floating on. And if we don't save it, then we're all going down.
What is it that you feel people can do if they want to change any kind of policy? What, this is not really something that's well known by others. So what is the initial step and the steps afterwards in order to accomplish something?
In affecting policy change?
Yes.
Well, first you have to vote for competent legislators. That's important. Competent being the key word there. People who have studied law and politics and sociology and all of these things. You know, you have to stay on them and let them know what it is that you want them to do, because it's so overwhelming. If I were, let's say, city council member or mayor, there are probably 200 different issues that would have my attention. I mean, right now in the city of Houston, there's a hurricane coming. We've got COVID pandemic, you know, there were people still dealing with floods from, you know, or mold from the last flood that we had. There's food insecurity, there's transportation issues, you know, I mean, there's, you know, the economy and jobs there. I mean, you name it, there's physical safety, the public safety, there's violence. I mean, homelessness, you know, the list goes on and on. And so it's hard for legislators and representatives to prioritize anything without the support of their constituency. So, you know, as trite as it may sound, I mean, I'm sure you've all heard it before, but vote and then call your representatives and let them know what you want them to do. More than that, you can get involved in your local civic organizations, your community organization, your super neighborhood here in Houston, right? Because those community leaders are being tapped for advisory boards at the city level and at the county level. So, you know, if you really care about making change in your neighborhood, get on the civic association, you know, and move up that way so that you become a leader in your community and your voice will be counted and maybe they'll listen to what it is that you want them to do.
I think it's really great advice. On the autistic side of things for policy, there's a lot of things that people believe could be done to help individuals with autism that could be helped to make it allow others to have that awareness of autism, but also be able to move forward with granting the changes that are needed. Texas isn't really known for their support of individuals with autism. And so it's nice to hear that there's a lot that they can do. So on your spare time, you're also an amazing drummer, as you talked about earlier. Of a band called the Hot and Heavies. So what led you to join a band like this?
We started about a year and a half ago. I was sitting at a coffee shop one morning by my daughter's school, trying to finish up some work for my that was in my master's program at the time. And a friend of mine came up to me. She ran into me and she was actually a former bandmate of mine. We used to play together in a group called Fussing and Fighting a few years ago. And she was like, hey, I'm starting a new project. I need a drummer. What do you say? And I was like, you know, I'm swamped right now. Give me like 3 months and I'm down. And she's like, great, I'll call you in 3 months. So that was it. Like, I already knew and loved the singer, Hannah, and our guitar player that we had played with before. And so the three of us just got together and they already had a bunch of songs and we found a bass player and we were like good to go. This was like March 2020 and we were like on fire. We were like, great, we're going to be playing a gig in no time. And, you know, I mean, you know what happened after that, right? So like the world shut down. And so a year later, we started practicing again and we've had two gigs. We've got our third one coming up here in a couple of days. Of course, by the time this airs, it will have been in the past.
Well, hopefully you'll have many other gigs in the future that people can check out.
Yeah, yeah. We're hoping to do one in October and one in December. So we've got a few on the calendar. But what prompted me to do it, like outside of like wanting to hang out with my friends and rock and roll, like drumming is such good physical catharsis. Like you don't really get to be loud and rowdy in the world very often. It's not like a socially acceptable thing. And so like getting some sticks and hitting stuff and like being a wild animal. I mean, granted, I'm a little more conservative than many other drummers. Like my guitar player is always like, okay, Paige, I want you to play this one. Like play boy drums. Play like boy drums on this one. He means, cause I have a little more finesse. Like I've got some jazz in my background and, you know, so I'm a little bit softer and more stylistic in a lot of ways. But there is just like a really good raw, like wanting to hit stuff. That's really nice.
Do you think it's helped you grow alongside this autism growing up? And there's a lot of things for kids that they say, oh, get into music. Music's going to help them get out a lot of energy. Yeah.
1000%. Like music was my language. I started playing music. I mean, I joined my first choir when I was probably 5 years old in elementary school. I was in the handbell choir. I started playing piano in junior high. I did percussion and high school as a marching band and on from there. And like, I taught lessons. God, I think maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I was teaching lessons at Guitar Center. I was teaching drum set lessons. And I started playing ukulele when I was there. And so it's just been this constant in my life of like, it's comforting. You know, there's something about the resonance, particularly with percussion and drums and really deep resonant tones that is like a calming vibration to like almost like a meditation. I don't know if you've heard anything about like vagus nerve stimulation, but it has something to do with like humming and vibrating the core of your body and your nervous system. And I feel like drumming and music in general for a lot of people has that ability to sort of like calm their nervous system. So yes, like 1000%, the two things that I would say are the most calming for me in my autism and in my overstimulation and hypersensitivity is music and nature. I would not be who I am or where I am today without it.
Is there anything that you wish people would do differently when interacting with individuals with autism or interacting with you?
Yeah, no, I wish people wouldn't wear so much perfume. That's the first one. Like seriously, or even dryer sheets, like scented lotion, all of those things. I wish they would just cut it out. I'm sorry. It's the harsh truth, but it's really awful. Everybody smells.
That hypersensitivity kicking in.
Yeah, it's bad everywhere you go. I think most people in my life are pretty understanding. I know I was at camp a couple weeks ago. So my daughter's in the Scouts and I went as an adult. And so we went to go to the cafeteria to eat dinner. And I in the cafeteria, there's like hundreds of people and it's loud and everybody's talking. And I think even before we got to the cafeteria, just being in the line in the crowd, I kind of freaked out and I had a meltdown and I had to leave. And I went and sat at the table and there was a guy next to me that I knew. And he was like, are you okay? And they're like, are you crying? And I just had tears streaming down my face. And I was like, I'm fine. It was just too much. It was just too much over there. And I just needed time out. And he just sat with me and like, just waited. And like, there weren't any questions. And like, we waited till everybody was done. And we went to the end of the line. And that to me felt like the best thing that anybody could have done was just to be there with me. He didn't ask questions. He didn't try to press me if I was okay. You know, it was just to sit with me, let me have my space. I breathed through it and I entered on my own time. And I think that's something that maybe could benefit a lot of autistic people is having their own time to do things. That's probably one of the hardest things to deal with is like institutional schedules, schools or airport or whatever, where it's like you have to be here and it's so rigid and these are the things that we must do. And like sometimes you just can't and you need to take a break. You need 10 minutes to have a little cry and step away and catch your breath and to be more understanding and giving grace to other people, because you don't know what people are going through. You don't know what's in their head, what's in their past, what trauma they're working through. So I would say just being more like water, letting it flow and being more gracious.
So before we leave, I have one last question, and it's one I typically ask my guests, but what advice or suggestions would you have, not just for the parents that we've talked about, but also any individual with autism that may be struggling to find their own path?
I would say just keep doing the things that you like to do, right? Because that's going to cultivate a talent, whatever it is, whether it's reading or playing chess or collecting little, you know, figurines, whatever it is, like focus on the things that make you happy, the more happy you're going to be, right? But you're also going to like cultivate a specific skill set and a knowledge. And like, not everybody has to be, you know, a jack of all trades. It's okay to like be specialized, right? And I think just staying happy, finding the things that allow you to have balance in your life and keep you calm, whether it's music and the ocean, or riding your bike, or you know, whatever it is, like having those things and allowing yourself to feel them, do them, you know, be a part of those communities is super important. Just try to be true to yourself. I spent almost all of my youth and, you know, probably through my 20s and most of my 30s trying to fit in, observing other people, trying to be like them, trying to say the right things or not speak at the right times, at the wrong time, you know, trying to be appropriate. And how much energy I wasted doing that, how much brain power and worry that I wasted trying to fit in. If I had just been doing my own thing and spending that energy on myself and cultivating my talents and abilities, I would be so much further in life. I'm happy where I am, but I do regret that I spent so much time to be like other people and trying to fit in. So if you can just be true to yourself and focus on you and the things that you love, you're going to be great.
That was really great. Thank you so much, Paige. Again, this was Paige Powell, climate activist and just an amazing person. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you.
That's our show this month. Thank you everyone for listening. Please be sure to like us on Facebook and Instagram at AutismINTL. And if you like what you heard, please be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts. Until next time, I am Armando Bernal, and I hope to see you again when we travel down a different path.